Two-Way Talk here on Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, absolutely the voice of the community. I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And I'm Kara Williams.
It's Friday, so we always have our news roundtable, and I have two of our most outstanding guests. He's a regular here on Two-Way Talk, Hassan Giordano, DMVDaily.com. He is a television, radio, live stream host. You can see him on Facebook and all social media. He is a political consultant, a political buyer. Hassan Giordano, welcome again to Two-Way Talk.
Hey, Anthony and Karen. Always a pleasure.
You don't sound like yourself, brother.
There,
you're not feeling good? How are you feeling,
man,
since last week?
This COVID is tearing my butt. I'm telling y'all right now, y'all better get protected. Do whatever you got to do. I know we've been talking about this for quite some time on this show.
We sure
I laughed and joked about how I ducked and dodged you for over a year and a half, and I'll be like Superman, and I'm good. Let me tell you something. As soon as I get from out of this bed rest or whatever they want to call it, quarantine, I'm going to get that shot in my arm.
Hassan Giordano, still one of the best. Also being very honest with himself. I'm excited for him. Mark McLaurin is joining us for the first time on Two-Way Talk. Mark is the Senior Vice President for Campaigns for the 1833 Group. He is a well-known political consultant and operative in Maryland. Mark McLaurin, welcome to Two-Way Talk.
Anthony and Ms. Williams, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be on.
It's exciting to have you on, Mark. We've been through many political battles together.
Indeed.
It's great to have you on the program. Folks, we want you to join the conversation with Kara and I as we talk about the politics around the country, around Maryland, and, of course, right here in our own Baltimore. 410-319-8888. That's the number for you to get engaged in this conversation. We'll talk about whatever you put on the table. We are excited to have you part of the dialogue and the conversation right here on Two-Way Talk. 410-319-8888. Our two dynamic guests, Hassan Giordano, Mark McLaurin, joins Kara and I today on Two-Way Talk. Guys, I want to begin with the United States Senate, currently in a very, very tough battle. Vice President Kamala Harris, always on speed dial to be rushed to the United States Capitol to cast a deciding vote. Well, a lot of senators are trying to make decisions about whether or not they will run for reelection. And really, what hangs in balance is the Democratic control or the Republican takeover of the United States Senate. Mark McLaurin, this is right down your bailiwick. What do you think is going to happen come the next midterm elections?
Well, so I think this is going to be, I mean, any analyst that tells you that they know which way this is going to go, the more sure they are, the more sure I am that they don't know what they're talking about. But I will say, I mean, what's exciting about this is two dynamics for me as a Democrat. One is that Donald Trump getting involved in these Republican primaries is going to be the death knell of Republican
fandom.
He's supporting Herschel Walker in Georgia.
Dear God.
A man that God bless him, suffers from multiple personality disorder, put a gun to his wife's head and told her he'd blow her effing head off. I mean, this is the caliber of candidate that they're supporting, and I think we'll be in good stead. The other untold story is the rise of black women for the United States Senate. I'm so excited. Supreme Court Justice Sherry Beasley in North Carolina, Congresswoman Val Demings of impeachment fame in Florida. I mean, black women are rising up, and if the Democrats retain their majority in the Senate, it's going to be on the backs of black women, and how fitting that would be.
Because a black woman, Demings, is really running hard in Florida, and I'm wondering if the other black candidates around the state, around the country, are planning to capitalize how excited Democrats get about running against candidates that are endorsed by Donald Trump.
That's right.
Hassan Giordano, give me your thoughts on the midterm elections. Will the Senate balance be undone?
Well, you know, that's still yet to be seen. We're really far out.
And yeah, I know, we really
you
know, are.
In years past, typically after Labor Day, things really start ramping up. But as you've seen, many of these current senators who could be up for re-election have yet to decide. Mm-hmm. It's kind of late based off of history, but currently we have 34 Senate seats that are up for grabs next mm-hmm. year
yep.
without anybody suddenly retiring. And Democrats only have to defend 14 of those 34. Mm-hmm. Republicans have to defend 20 of those seats, which you would think would work in favor of Democrats.
Yes.
However, the general rule of thumb has always been that the party in control of the
control.
White House
yep.
during that first midterm election does not do well. I mean, there are some exceptions. 2002, when Bush, right after 9/11, the Republicans kind of did well. But, you know, Democrats have such a minimal majority, 3 in the House, and they're split even right in the
yep,
Senate.
In the Senate.
So it's going to take an act of God and a hell of a united message from Democrats for them to hold control over both chambers come next year. Now, we saw Governor Newsom, he was able to hold off that Republican-driven recall effort,
uh-huh.
but, I mean, that's a democratically controlled state, so that's not much of a litmus test moving into 2022,
mm-hmm.
but the referendum is going to be on Donald Trump for good, bad, or indifferent next year, and you can best believe that if Republicans do well and take back control of the House, the Senate, or both, his name will be on the ballot for president in 2024.
Wow. So I'm wondering if there is any way possible. I'm looking at a list here. Senator Ron Johnson has Wisconsin is facing a huge, tough battle, hasn't decided whether he's going to even run for reelection. Senator GOP
yep.
Senator Lisa Murkowski from Alaska took a wild beating from Donald Trump throughout his term as president, says she has not decided whether or not she will run for reelection. That's just two of the Republicans who are really concerned about how they're going to deal with the Donald Trump truck coming their way. What do you think, Mark?
Yeah, well, so in Wisconsin especially is really interesting because Ron Johnson, they call him Landslide Johnson, he always gets back into
he does, yep.
one or two points. And so, you know, we've got a very exciting candidate there, young African-American Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, who is challenging Ron Johnson. Now, he's got a primary, so we'll see. But if he comes through that primary, I think increasingly
wow.
it's exciting that in it used to be the rule of thumb that in swing states, the last thing you would want to do is nominate an African-American for a competitive seat. But, you know, the Democrats are increasingly turning to African-Americans and especially black women
mm-hmm.
to get them over the hump in these races. And I think that that all kind of started with Reverend Raphael Warnock.
Warnock,
you
that's
know,
right, in Georgia.
Felt like, couldn't win, and now he's in. And also had tip to Stacey Abrams, who will be running for governor again on next year. And so she was kind of the blueprint for much of this. Well, actually, can't leave Carol Moseley Braun out. She really got it started. But you know, African Americans in competitive statewide swing states just does my heart good as a Democratic consultant.
Well, interestingly enough, a lot of people, Hassan Giordano, tell me what you think. A lot of people are saying we should be praising Stacey Abrams for setting the tone for all these active African-Americans across the country. She's called them to action and getting activated. They really are. What do you think about that?
Well, I'm with Mark in the sense that let's not forget the Carol Moseley Braun and people of historic value, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Look, I take nothing away from Stacey Abrams and what she did in Georgia and the call to action, but you've had a lot of individuals who made inroads. The mayor of Atlanta who's decided, you know what, I'm not even mayor anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm gonna, you know, they've done tremendous job, and we've seen the changing of the guard, so to speak, of African Americans being able to win seats like this. And unfortunately, we're not there yet in Maryland. We have yet to see one. But hell, we might have an attorney general candidate if the current attorney general in Maryland doesn't run. You may see an African American finally win statewide here in the great state of
mm-hmm.
Maryland. You might see an African American gubernatorial candidate. Who knows? But
mm-hmm.
I think nationally.
And color too, Hassan. Don't forget comptroller.
Sure. And you got Comptroller as well. And that'll be it. And I'm really looking forward to that race between Tim Adams and Brooke Learman. And somebody else may jump in the race. Who knows? I mean, again, we're still somewhat far out in that.
Yeah, we
are. The two main candidates. But I'm looking at Pat Toomey in Pennsylvania, Richard Byrd, North Carolina, Marco Rubio in Florida, which was kind of surprising me, but those numbers are starting to get closer as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then Democrats have to worry about some of their seats. Mark Kelly in Arizona, Raphael Warnock in Georgia. It's going to be a very interesting 2022 midterm election across this country. And I think election night, November 8th, we're going to see a lot of surprises.
We will be.
And, you know, but again, like I think I agree with Mark. If anybody tries to say they can call it right now, I really want to see what COVID kind of stuff they've been putting in their veins.
And I'm telling you, if Georgia Republicans nominate Herschel Walker, they might as well go ahead and coronate Raphael Warnock again. Big, big, big mistake choosing Herschel Walker. Great football player, less likely a good senatorial candidate.
I'm not real surprised that they are attracted to black women that are running for the office. I was shocked that Stacey Abrams, when she lost, that she just kept moving. Did not stop her. And I think a lot of people, even if a black woman doesn't have a whole bunch of political skills, which most of them do, I think they are attracted to the nurturing nature of the black women and their caring and empathy of their, you know, they take them seriously.
Mm.
You know, I'm not really a political person.
But I think you're on point.
Yeah.
I think you're on point. Let's go to the phones. Clarence is joining us. Clarence, welcome to Two Way Talk.
Hey, Anthony, thanks for taking this call.
Great to have you.
I don't want to throw a monkey wrench in the conversation, but I got to go back to your conversation with the gentleman you had on from the Baltimore City Development Corporation.
Colin Talbert.
Anthony. Uh-huh. Yes, Mr. Talbert. Now, Anthony, look, the usage of the word minority, when you say minority and you throw black folks and Latino folks in there together and talk about minorities have made these economic gains. Look, there needs to be some delineation between black and brown folks, because as far as black folks, the numbers go, Latino folks and are a minority compared to black folks.
Mm-hmm.
So you cannot group together and just say minorities are making these economic gains, because it skews the picture when the lesser of the number of majorities are making more economic gains than the top, you know, the black folks. Now, that skews the picture. That presentation and that usage of minority, whereas to try and give a perception that black folks are making these tremendous gains along with Latino and people and brown people, is not true. When you look at the economic indicators of this country and you were to go in and do income tax revenue for, let's say, the economic in oil, gas, trucking, housing, and all of those things, I think that you would find that the minority, the brown folks, are making more tremendous economic gains by the numbers. So when he comes on and he makes that thing, the top 500 corporations are doing and making the most gains because they're hiring the most people. So what are we talking about? Are we including bridges, roads, construction in that? Because that's one of the top tier economic indicators. And you're not going to tell me, based visually, what you see going on every day, that black folks are making a tremendous gain there. Now, on the lighter side, Anthony, I want you to laugh at this. You know, I keep, in my head, I keep picturing Donald Trump and Larry Elder, and I just can't help but crack up. If he could pull a rabbit out of his hat for that one, you know, I was like, okay.
It would take a rabbit coming out of a hat for Larry Elder to win in California. And I can't believe people are actually having, Mark McLaurin, people were having reasonable, rational conversations predicting that Larry Elder would be competitive against Newsom. He didn't even come close in that recall.
No. I mean, but you know, to be fair, a lot of the public and private polling, from talking to folks that worked on that race. In the middle of the summer, there was a kind of swoon that got Larry.
That's fairly, right.
Well, not Larry really close, but in terms of the
a Republican.
Because remember,
right,
it was two separate It was two separate questions. And so it was, do you want to recall him, yes or no? And then if yes won, then they go to the recall vote. Mm-hmm. So Larry Elder did not need to get 50% to be elected governor.
He didn't.
He could have gotten as low as 35%.
That's right, and be elected.
As long as people voted yes to throw him out. So that really was the concern. It never really was primarily about Larry Elder. But I agree that we dodged the bullet, and I actually don't agree with Hassan that us keeping that means nothing. The margin that we kept it by, nearly 2-1.
Yeah.
I think signals that the Democratic electorate in this country continues to be energized, and that bodes well for our midterms, whatever state we're talking about.
But I think Hassan was right when it comes to California. It is such a blue state. But remember, Arnold Schwarzenegger was the governor, was during a recall election, became the governor. Other Republicans have won seats. It's the home state to Ronald Reagan. It is a possibility that the right Republican could do well in blue California.
And you
like Condoleezza Rice. Absolutely.
You know, they're turning out Democrats in a recall election, right?
Yep.
Which, again, that's good because, I mean, when you look at elections, special elections and stuff, usually the turnout isn't as high, right? That's fine. But can you do that in 2022 on November 8th? That's the question. Can you turn out that many Democrats in Texas? Can you turn out that many Democrats in Georgia?
Mm-hmm.
These are going to be key questions, especially with so many laws being changed on the books in these states that actually are going to end up hurting Democrats, especially minorities in many of these states. And that's going to be the key question. Can Democrats turn those people out when it's most necessary?
We are going to be watching the elections come November of 2022 with eyes, I think many of them are going to be wide open with surprise, because I think that in Florida and other places, look, I don't know the outcome, can't predict the outcome, but I'm telling you, Deming's going to give him a run for his money.
Mm-hmm.
And if she wins the nomination, is anyone else challenging her?
No one of note.
Okay.
the interesting part of that also is that the number of African American women that are running that are from non-traditional professions, you know.
Yes.
They're not teachers or social workers. Val Demings was a sheriff.
A sheriff. Law enforcement.
Supreme Court justice. You know what I mean? Like, these are, it's just exciting to see the diversity of experience of black women on display across this country, win, lose, or draw.
I think it's going to be good for us. And I think that one of the people who I think many of us are somewhat surprised at some of the disappointing decisions that Kamala Harris has made during the first 6 months of her time in office. Hasn't done anything extraordinary. Really screwed up when it came to the border. Very, very disappointing for her relations in Afghanistan and Iraq. I think she's going to have to really dig deep the second part of this term to pull it out, to get the Democrats are going to support her regardless. I think a lot of people are disappointed. Hassan, what do you think?
Yeah, I think people are disappointed in this entire Biden-Harris administration right now. It's almost like you can't get right? If it's not one thing, it's the next.
It's something else, yeah.
They're going from one controversy to the next and just talking to hear about what happened in Kabul that they just talked about today. I mean, it's like they just can't get out of their own way. And on the back burner of that, there's a lot of really meaningful legislation pending before the Senate and the House.
It sure is,
yeah. Can't get done. Mm. And, you know, granted, in the Senate you need the 60 votes, but sometimes you can, we've talked about how they're trying to do reconciliation and that sort. And they still can't get it done. And it's, you have that majority, no matter how slight and slim it is, and it just can't get done. And I think that's the momentum starter they need to go into 2022.
Mm-hmm.
Democrats need those wins in the Senate and the House in order to transfer that energy into the election coming to 2022, and they haven't been able to do it. We'll see if they can close out the year doing it, but I'm not so hopeful.
Mark McLaurin, the most loyal Democrat I know.
I gotta. You gotta give me 30 seconds to take a couple swings for my girl Kamala. Now, let me tell you, I think this is where the interesting double standard comes about for black women. First of all, the vice president only has two jobs. Break a tie in the Senate and inquire daily as to the health of the president. Okay? Those are the two jobs of a vice president. So, like, all this, you know, rending of garments and gnashing of teeth about what she hasn't done in 7 months in the job, I didn't even know who Mike Pence was until they threatened to hang him. And no one has said anything about, well, gee, Mike Pence is quite a disappointment. We haven't really seen him out there. I mean, I think that she has an area of expertise that has not really been on display yet, and I'll admit that. But the idea that she's been like some kind of disappointment or master of debacle, it's just I just don't think it's true, and I don't think it's fair, and it always makes me suspicious when we hold, you know, women of color to a higher standard and an unfair standard than we did Mike Pence or Dick Cheney or any of the other ones.
I agree
quite frankly, Joe Biden himself.
I agree with you, Mark, but we all know that there was a meeting recently held in Washington, D.C. Some of the most prominent women in the Democratic Party got together for dinner trying to figure out how in the hell can we save Kamala Harris. Donna Brazile was there. Obama's right hand was there. There were a lot of Democratic women trying to figure out why Kamala Harris was not doing a better job.
What are they expecting her to
do? I think that's disappointing.
I think one of the things that Mark pointed out to us that we have to do, and Hassan pointed out, they've got to get this legislation through the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're able to do that, if they're able to get the two major pieces of legislation through the Senate, Kamala Harris can rest a little bit easier. Mm-hmm. I think people's expectations of her are so great that she can't meet those expectations, but she better try.
Well, it's important to understand that, like, just this childhood tax credit alone has the potential to be transformational in terms of poverty in this country.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we get. I mean, I think they're making a certain calculation that, you know, we always say, under Obama, when the Democrats get it, we always say, well, you know, we can't do too much because the midterms are coming up and we don't want to get voted out. I think that rightly, the Biden administration has made the decision that we have all the keys to the kingdom right now. We are going to press forward as hard as we can. If that means we lose the House or lose the Senate, well, then so be it. At least we look back and have something to accomplish.
Now, I know.
Look back on something that we accomplished. I mean, this child tax credit, talk to folks in the streets. It hasn't even hit yet, but, you know, like,
who can't wait for it to hit?
Child care tax credit, you know, hits the way it's proposed, it will really be transformational, especially in communities of color.
Now, Mark McLaurin, you probably will have a lot of candidates that are up for election come election 2022. But I want to have Hassan Giordano and Mark McLaurin on WEAA with me that evening as we call some of these races. Kara, it will be hot.
Okay,
it will be hot. So, folks, we're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, there is going to be a rally tomorrow. Some people saying it's going to rival the January 6th rally. A lot of people are expecting violence in Washington, D.C. We're going to talk about it when we come back. Your calls at 410-319-8888. Join the conversation here on Two Way Talk. Two-Way Talk here on Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, absolutely the voice of the community. I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And I'm Carol Williams.
You've tuned to Public Radio WEAA. Every Friday, we have a news roundtable with some of the brightest minds in news and politics. Today, we're joined by Mark McLaurin, a senior vice president of campaigns for the 1833 Group, which has really, really proven itself to be a major player in the world of politics in 2021. Mark, tell us a little bit about the 1833 Group.
Sure. So the 1833 Group is a full-service Democratic consulting firm that's based in Chicago. I head up their East Coast operation, and we have congressional candidates, a couple of statewide candidates, and, you know, local and state candidates across mm-hmm. the country. And we help them with all aspects of campaigns. We specialize initially in fundraising, but general consulting and all across the board. It's really amazing to get around the country and meet the different candidates and help good Democrats get elected.
The head of their East Coast. I knew when you were a baby Politico, and now you are senior vice president of the 1833 Group. I'm so proud of you. Hassan Giordano, superstar in the world of politics, DMVDaily.com. You probably see him on television, hear him on the radio. He has a very active live stream presence. He's a political consultant. Hassan, always great to have you here on Fridays. Adds credibility to our show.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. Now, Mark, was it founded in 1833, or why is it named 1833?
You would have to ask. I think it really is about that's the year that the Democratic Party was founded.
Oh, okay.
Oh, gotcha.
That would explain.
That makes it.
That makes sense.
I was going to say, that's an old firm.
So, Hassan, let me ask you, the right... Religious right, political right, has called for a rally tomorrow in Washington to add support or call for support of those who marched on the Capitol on January the 6th. A lot of people are shaking in their boots. I think that the law enforcement that's protecting the Capitol, they are more prepared, obviously, than they were for January 6th. What's going to happen tomorrow in Washington?
I want to say almost nothing. We're making a lot out of nothing. But last time I said that during January 6th, I remember going, just landed in Mississippi, got to the hotel room, turned on the news, and
all hell had broken loose.
Yep. Right. And I'm like, oh my God. So I don't want to sleep on the Proud Boys, the Oath Keepers, and all the other right wing organizations and individuals that will certainly be in attendance at the Justice for J6 rally.
Oh, yeah.
But you mix that with the reported counter rallies that are scheduled to take place some at Freedom Plaza, and it only further heightening the potential of violence between these ideological opponents. However, I agree with you, Anthony, that with the increasing security and the fact that we saw the lack of law enforcement on January 6th, it's unlikely that they're going to allow real events of violence to really take place. We'll probably see a few handful of skirmishes. I don't think that hopefully it'll be nothing serious. If it is, God, I just say a prayer for our nation's capital, because there has been talks about kidnapping Congress people and so forth. And so you don't want to minimize threats of that nature. And you would hope that nothing that serious happens. But we saw, you know, if it wasn't for the FBI and others, when they tried to kidnap the governor over there in Michigan, things of that sort, they're going a little too far. We're not talking about Al-Qaeda.
Of course.
We're talking about domestic terrorism.
We're talking about people in America. That's right.
Right. And so, I want us to really take this seriously and not minimize it, and I'm hoping law enforcement does just that tomorrow.
So, Mark McLaurin, there is talk that Nancy Pelosi said, look, I'm not going to be in Washington this weekend anyway. But there is heightened security around all of the leadership, both Democrats and Republicans in Congress. There are certain expectations when these right-wing groups meet these left-wing groups in Washington's fireworks can explode.
Well, I think one of the most fascinating dynamics of this whole enterprise, I was watching the lead organizer on C-SPAN this morning, to see these knuckle-draggers all of a sudden turn into criminal justice reform advocates because their fellow traitors are locked up in prison. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're advocating for HEPA water filters in prison. They're
vegan meals. They want vegan meals for themselves.
Yes, vegan meals and HEPA water filters. And there's, you know, a lot of gnashing of teeth about, you know, how terrible it is that someone is incarcerated. And, you know, they don't even get to use the bathroom when they want to, and they're not able to access their attorney whenever
they're in prison.
You know, like, prison.
Welcome to the real world.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I hope that this kinder and gentler approach to corrections continues on after their Confederates have gone the way of the great white whale.
So, Kara, there is talk And he has denied it, but that President Trump will be in Washington tomorrow.
Yes.
To speak to his supporters.
Yes. And I believe he will be.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I believe he will be.
He can't miss that opportunity.
No, I don't think he'll miss that opportunity. I also believe that there's so many right-wing websites that we can't catch all of them.
Yeah.
And the talk on these websites is probably already violent.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think he's going to come. He's going to stir something up. And like you said, when the right and the left get together, it's just going to be clashing. It's going to clash. My hope is that, you know, Homeland Security utilizes every police force that they can in and around the Washington, D.C. area.
The only thing that I think will keep Trump away is that at the end of the day, Donald Trump is a coward, okay? If you'll remember on January the 6th, he gave that speech and said, go on and march
on
the Capitol.
I'm coming with you.
And they marched to the Capitol, and he took his behind right on back in the White House.
Uh-huh.
So I don't think he has the courage to go anywhere where there could be some conflagration and he could get bummed around and his pay could get twisted. You know, so that's my only hesitation. Nobody loves an adoring crowd more than Donald Trump, but also nobody is more careful about Donald Trump than Donald Trump. And I just don't think that he's got the courage to expose himself to a potentially scary security situation.
Well, he was careful about it. He stayed where he was. That's probably why he gave his speech where he gave his speech the first time. So I think that if he does show up, he's going to be strategic about where he gives his speech and where he sends his supporters to.
Hassan Giordano, what do you think of the courage of the president, former president?
I think he got some big kahunas, to be quite who he is. Trust and believe, I wouldn't put nothing past this guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree in the sense that he's thinking about this politically, too. He also understands the fact that if he does show up in person and something does take off the way some would assume, that it could almost be put on him.
Yeah.
So I don't think he's that stupid to just show up not understanding how security's laid out, exactly what's behind this particular rally. If he does, it'll be a closed-circuit television, and he'll be broadcasting from Mar-a-Lago down in Florida. But I'm with Mark. I don't see him just willy-nilly showing up in Washington, D.C.
Now,
understanding that he can't control the dynamics.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Now, there were a lot of people in those conspiracy theories that Antifa was causing all the problems, that it wasn't the right-wingers, it was the left-wingers that had snuck in and became part of the leadership of these right-wing groups to cause all the problems. What happens tomorrow, and God forbid there is violence like we saw on January the 6th, what does it say about politics and culture, Mark McLaurin, in this country if violence breaks out again in the nation's capital?
I think it just would signal what we already know, is that this is and continues to be a deeply, deeply, deeply divided country.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we used to argue about the issues, but now we don't even agree on what we're arguing about. I mean, I listened to this woman on C-SPAN this morning that was talking about, you know, that CNN was paying this black guy $30,000 and he was standing next to the woman that was killed in the Capitol. I mean, there's so much fake news out there that we Americans don't even have a common basis from which to argue anymore.
Mm-hmm. Hassan Giordano, I, as you said, no one knows what's going to happen tomorrow. Look into your crystal ball, not your crystal ball. Tell us, how in the world can we overcome this cultural divide that we see getting deeper and deeper in America?
Well, we have to have some common values, right? And I don't think we're coming from two different perspectives, in my opinion, on this. And this right wing and even the left wing are totally way off to the right and to the left, and there's no common ground anymore.
Mm-mm.
Like, it used to be celebrated that we would have people in the center, right? The center would be the ones who would be the kind of neutral ground of politics, and it was okay to be in the center. Now, it's like, God forbid somebody like McCurkey, was it Murkowski?
Murkowski.
From Alaska, who, you're too far to the center, God forbid, now you got to go. Like, that makes absolutely no sense. And for some reason, it's people have it in their mind on the right wing. They want to bring back this country to where it used to be, right? Mm. When there was no blacks even thinking about running for office. They couldn't even register to vote, let alone run for office. Mm-hmm. That's what Trump and this right wing wants to take this country back to. And we're not able to get on that same mindset to make any rational arguments against that. That's just racism in its purest form. Mm. And until we get to a point in this country that we can understand what the other side is saying, and it's a rational conversation, mind you, and we can be able to have that back and forth, we're going to continue to be on a road to a civil war.
Now, Mark McLaurin, I do want to ask you, because it's so easy to point the finger at the Republicans, and they are so divided. The line between the Trumpers and the rest of the party is so clear, but the rest of the party is terrified to say anything against the Trumpers. But in the Democratic Party, the progressives are really kicking up some dust, led by AOC and the squad, all just keeping Nancy Pelosi pulling her hair out in the House. The progressives have problems with their own party, correct?
I don't disagree with that. Uh-huh. Is that, you know, the Democratic Party has always been, you know, a fractious.
Of course.
You know, Will Rogers said many years ago that I don't belong to an organized party. I'm a Democrat, and so there's always been this tension. And look, there's going to be a reckoning in this party.
Oh, yes.
Between young, you know, predominantly white, you know, progressives and, you know, the backbone of the Democratic Party electorally, which are older African Americans. You saw this in Hillary versus Bernie, you know, that there was just in Biden versus Bernie. Again, you know, that, you know, Bernie was doing fine until he got to South Carolina and Jim Clyburn and all those old black folks said, no, he don't even look like a president. We ain't voting for Bernie. You know, and so there is a reckoning that's going to come, but I'm always hesitant to mention that in the same conversation with what the Republicans are going through. Because Democrats argue over policy. Republicans argue over an entire kind of worldview. I mean, Lisa Murkowski, the idea that Lisa Murkowski and Liz Cheney, who is the daughter of Darth Vader, Dick Cheney, are now somehow apostates in that Republican Party is a scary notion. And so, yes, I agree we've got, you know, a couple splinters in our own eye, but they got a whole plank across the forehead.
So interestingly enough, I have some friends who are very close friends to the Romneys, and we're together with the Romneys recently, and he said that Senator Romney said, listen, a few years ago, I was the standard bearer for the Republican Party. I was the Republican Party nominee for president of the United States. Now I've got to be careful what Republican rooms I go in. He may be booed off stage. The Republican Party is seeing some fractures that run very, very deep in their party.
I think that's true. There is a virtual cult of personality built around him. Nothing illustrates this better than the fact that Herschel Walker is supposed to take it as a serious candidate for the United States Senate because Donald Trump said so.
Yeah. What were you saying, Hassan?
Well, I said the fracture, the deep divide in that party, it's called racism.
Mm-hmm.
And Donald Trump brought out the worst in individuals.
He did.
Bottom line. And people started to realize. Now, mind you, I do want to say it's not, you know, the left isn't that far away from the right in terms of its ideological divide. You can find similarities between the two when you talk about, as Mark said, ideological divide. But in this particular sense, it's all about racism. It's all about individuals like the Proud Boys and others who stand up proudly to say, we don't even want to intertwine with those people that don't look like us.
Wow.
And that is the furthest thing you need from the standard bearer of a party.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, that is the standard bearer of their party, Donald J. Trump. And I've never seen, even during Reagan's time, I've never seen a party revolve around one individual.
One individual,
as if he's God Almighty. I don't understand it. Even the Democrats realize it's not about one individual in their party.
Mm-hmm.
It's about, you know, ideas and values and how we can get behind an individual. But that individual is just the standard bearer for that particular time.
Yes.
Right? Obama is a god of the Democratic Party. I've never seen people get behind somebody in such a way like they would bow down to Donald Trump and do whatever he says. I just don't get that.
Yes, the racism is what brings it out. Mm-hmm. These people have been semi in the shadows until Donald Trump came, and now he's bringing them all out of the woodwork.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this thing in D.C., we're dealing with a mentality of we need to finish what we started.
Yeah.
And he's pumping it up. I think he's pumping it up.
Folks,
Democrats have pitched battles about, you know, how best to save the moon.
Mm-hmm.
The Republicans are arguing whether, in fact, the moon is made of green cheese. You know what I mean? Like, that's the difference.
Mark,
in the conversation.
You're harsh. 410-319-8888 is the number if you'd like to join our conversation. Hassan Giordano is with us. Mark McLaurin is with Kara and I today. Let's go to the phones. Gloria, welcome to Two Way Talk. Gloria? Nope, she's not there. All right, let's go to Dwayne. Dwayne, welcome to Two Way Talk.
Hey, thanks a lot for taking my call.
Thanks for calling,
hey,
sir.
I like this conversation, and I want to add this. You know, I don't think the Democrats have a problem. I think that the problem that the Democrats have is that they're always allowing the Republicans to define what's going on with the Democrats. They're always allowing the Republicans and Republican media to set up their narrative of what's happening in the Democratic Party. You know, this term, you be progressive and left-wing, extremists and all that stuff, this stuff was all made up by the by right-wing media, okay, to counteract, you know, their far-rightism. Okay, and we as Democrats are constantly just going right along and buying into it and then start speaking that narrative, and now that's supposed to be a real thing. It's really fake and phony. Democrats suck the most at messaging, and they've done so for 30, 40 years. They just are not good at messaging. Republicans are the masters of media, and that's something that we need to start thinking about. And the other thing we need to think about really quickly is that, you know, the Republican, we got to stop looking at the Republican Party through this idealized thought process that they want what's best for America. No, they don't. They want what's best for a certain group of people, and it ain't us, okay? So we need to hold our friends close, okay, because if we do get to some crazy, you know, war-type stance, we're going to need numbers that we don't have.
Mm. Dwayne, thank you. Appreciate your perspective. I will tell you that the word progressive and the progressive movements was something that was started by Democrats. People didn't want to be called liberals anymore, and they started saying, no, I'm progressive. And so I don't know if the right wing was trying to define them and coming up with their own terminology. That's a creation of Democrats. Let's go back to the phones. Jeff is calling from Pasadena. Jeff, welcome to Two Way Talk.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Jeff, hey. I knew you were going to call.
Yeah, you know me. I got to. Marcus, I don't think I've ever talked to you before, so it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Absolutely.
I want to respond to what Dwayne said, and I want to talk about something else. Dwayne said something about Republicans don't know what's best for black people.
Mm-hmm.
I know 3 years into Donald Trump's presidency, before the China virus came out, the unemployment rate for black people was at a 50-year low, and in addition to that, home ownership for blacks was at an all-time high. And you could say, well, it's because of this, because of that. Whoever's in charge gets the credit, just like if times are bad, well, then they take the fault. And as far as this Trump bashing I keep hearing, and I keep hearing the word racist, I don't know if you all saw this or remember. I believe it was a few weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago, Joe Biden was talking about a black guy. I forgot his name, and he used the word boy. Do you all remember that?
No.
Okay. A couple weeks ago, he was talking about a black guy, and he used the word boy. And I, you know, if you listen to it, you might want to Google it. I don't think he was using it, like, in a friendly manner. That's all I had to say.
Jeff, always great to hear from you. Keep calling and keep us on our toes. It's great to hear from you. Now, I'm looking, I'm Googling Biden and the word boy right now.
Well, it's actually the coronavirus, not the China virus, too.
I wouldn't doubt that Joe Biden said that. And I don't think too many African Americans that aren't, you know, all proud Democrats and would think Democrats can't do any wrong wouldn't think that Joe Biden has some racism up in his body as well. Mm-hmm. But he's not out there touting the Proud Boys and dog whistling these racist comments the way Donald Trump is. Just, he's not doing it. Even if he believes it, he's not actually out there touting this on a regular basis, and Donald Trump is. Mm-hmm. Point blank, bottom line, you can say what you want. True, the economic, the caller before that is right, though. Republicans have always had a better message.
Yeah.
It's like Fox News made Donald Trump, right? He wouldn't even have been president had it not been for Fox News. So their media and their savvy is far and above what Democrats usually come across.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't say that's going to happen at all times. But at the end of the day, is you can't walk away from what Donald Trump is and what he's become. And he saw he had to do this in order to become who he is. And he's proud to be who he is, which is even sadder.
Mm-hmm. So I did Google this context, and there are several stories. Biden did, in fact, refer to one of his top black advisors as boy during a FEMA briefing. He says he didn't intend to use the term in an offensive way. But in fact, Jeff is right. He did use the term referring to one of his black advisors, called him a boy. Now, Mark, messaging, as you said, the Democrats have always been real weak on this. Tell me what you think going into 20, and we're going to change to Baltimore City. Tell me what you think the message has to be for Democrats going into the midterms.
I think we have to be much more bold. I mean, part of the problem with Democratic messaging is that as a culture, this party is so loath to offend anyone. You know what I mean? Like, that, like, part of the reason why Republican messaging is successful around things like snowflakes is that we are snowflakes. You know what I mean? Everyone's like, no, you can't say that, because then somebody may feel as though you are, you know, you are impugning their heritage or their, you know. And so it's important to be sensitive, but you can't, you know, you can't hamstring your messaging like that. So I'm hoping that the Democrats will finally, you know, be bold and call even Republicans who have been ridiculous. We're always loath to say, you know, some Republicans and these people are bent. There is 45% of this country that is bent on destroying it. We need to say that forthrightly so that it wakes up not only our voters, but our people who sympathize with us but do not vote. We've got to have conversations with folks. You can go all throughout West Baltimore and find people that if they voted, they would absolutely vote with us. But they don't, and they never have.
And,
you know?
Yep.
We need to issue a clarion call to them. I'm hoping that that's what happens with some of the bold leadership at the DNC that's coming with the new South Carolina chairman
Jamie Harrison.
Jamie Harrison and some other folks. I hope that there's a new day in Democratic messaging that is bold and that is not afraid to be comparative, because the Republicans are never shy about drawing distinctions.
They sure are.
Democrats
not.
Need to be less shy.
They really are clear about telling you who they are, and sometimes we just don't believe it. Let's go to the phones. Lauren, welcome to Two-Way Talk.
You all always give us good insight.
I wanted to ask
something different. Have you heard any rumblings about the young Greenbelt Mayor Colin Byrd possibly running against Steny Hoyer when his term comes up?
My understanding is Mayor Byrd is, in fact, running against Steny Hoyer currently.
Now,
I could be wrong. Mark McLaurin?
No. Colin is a dear friend of mine. He's one of the first people I hired to organize for me at SEIU. Colin Byrd is actually running against United States Senator Chris Van Hollen.
Chris Van Hollen.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Now, folks, we only have a couple of minutes left. So, Hassan, I was very impressed with a story on Baltimore City Health Commissioner Dr. DeRaza. that she has seen the city of Baltimore through one of its most difficult times, economically as well as health-wise, as the health commissioner. What did you think? Is she worthy of this kind of praise? One of the smartest people in Brandon Scott's administration.
She is, and unfortunately, most people think that because she's so young that the Scott administration is the one who brought her in. Nope. It was actually Catherine Hughes' administration who brought her in. And probably one of the best things that the Peel administration did, in my opinion. This young woman is exceptionally talented.
Yeah.
We should be very lucky and fortunate to have this young lady and do whatever we can to keep her. I know that one of our colleagues said she was created in the lab to combat COVID, which was an interesting comment, but nonetheless, she is ready for this moment.
Mm-hmm.
She tackled the measles epidemic first coming in under the Pew administration and then the Young administration, and then now had to deal with the COVID. And look, a lot of people have criticized that administration because they were very cautious
in
reopening businesses, especially restaurants and stuff, as COVID went on, while other surrounding jurisdictions were quick to open up. And I'm kind of thankful they did that, right? They actually did what they were supposed to do, follow the science.
Yes.
But they weren't bending to the political will of people who just wanted to get out, right? And granted, I understand people's frustration after being locked down and after being told for so many months to do this and that and certain. But I think this administration really slowed the COVID virus.
They really did, in the city.
Right. And Lord Baltimore, they opened up that to be able to control, because what you don't understand is when you get COVID in a household and others don't, in your household don't have it, what are you supposed to do?
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't, it's hard to shelter in place when other people in your household have to. So now you have to be able to find a way that you, being affected, go somewhere else so your family's safe, right?
Yep.
They opened up Lord Baltimore for the homeless and for others to be able to do this. If you really dig deep into what Baltimore City did during COVID, most of that can be attributed to this young lady who has done a remarkable job as our city health commissioner.
So, Mark McLaurin, that music means we're out of time. So if you, have, you have anything to add, just add it very quickly.
No, I just wanted to say very quickly, one of the best things that Baltimore has been known for during this epidemic is that powerful social media campaign with the memes about getting the vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
And those were the brainchild of Adam Abadir, who was the former chief of staff to Councilmember Chris Burnett, now is the director of communications for the Baltimore City Health Department.
Mm-hmm.
Young African-American man that took over that communications department and has been getting more good press for Baltimore City than anything else I can think of. So I wanted to make sure he got a shout-out.
We got to go. Karen, I thank you both. Hassan Giordano, DMV Daily Com, great to have you. Hassan, take care of yourself. We need you around for a long, long time. Mark McLaurin, Senior Vice President for Campaigns for the 1833 Group. First time on Two-Way Talk. You will definitely be back. Mm-hmm. It's great to have you both on.
I look forward to it. Thank you so much.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
We're going to go to a break. Before we do that, let's go to Kirk Kroenke and get our MTA report.